Coming to you live from the Cross Country Mortgage Campus in Berea, Ohio. This is Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet. Now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland. Here are your hosts, Bo Bishop and Nathan Zagura.
Hi again, everybody. Jason Gibbs with you on this Friday. It is Cleveland Browns Daily. It's brought to you by Ballybet, a sports betting partner of your Cleveland Browns, now live in Ohio. A lot to get to on a busy Friday for the CBD crew. Coming up today, you will hear from head coach Kevin Stefanski the day after he won the Coach of the Year in the National Football League. He joined the Rich Eisen Show. Rich and Coach with a very, very entertaining interview. You'll enjoy that. New offensive coordinator Ken Dorsey met with the media in the last few weeks. He was introduced to the Cleveland Browns fans. You'll hear from him. You'll also hear from Nathan Zagura as he sits down in exclusive CBD interviews with Ephraim Banda, the Browns safety coach, and Stephen Bravo Brown, the special teams assistant coach for your Cleveland Browns, both of whom were involved in the East-West Shrine Game and the Senior Bowl. Ephraim Banda was the defensive coordinator in the Senior Bowl. Stephen Bravo Brown, the special teams coordinator in the East-West Shrine Game. You'll also hear from Z as our position reviews continue, and it's a deep dive look at the running back room. So a full day to get to. We'll kick things off after this quick timeout with Browns safety coach Ephraim Banda. Those are your hot topics of the day, presented by Vivid Seats, an official fan experience partner of the Cleveland Browns. One other note, don't miss Billy Joel and Rod Stewart together for the first time ever, Friday, September 13th at Cleveland Browns Stadium. Tickets are on sale now. Visit ClevelandBrownsStadium.com/BillyandRod2024 for more information. It's Billy Joel and Rod Stewart together for one night only. You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, a sports betting partner of your Cleveland Browns, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, sports betting partner of your Cleveland Browns. Nathan Zagura, very excited to be joined by a fast friend of the show, Browns safety coach Ephraim Banda. And coach, let's start here, because this was your first year in the NFL. Your first year in the NFL is in the books. Was it what you expected? What stood out to you from that?
I think the biggest thing that stood out to me was just the volume of football that you deal with when you go from college to the NFL. You do a lot of football in college, especially at some of the places we had been. But when you get to the league, the amount of ball you really do and the detail that it must be done with just drastically changes. So finishing up year one, it was exactly what everyone said it would be. A lot, kind of a bit of a mess for a little bit, but I'm really thankful for, you know, Jim Schwartz and having his door open to me all the time. I could walk in. I know a couple times he would be like, "What do you want again?" But I just wanted to do it the way he asked. And B. Lynch was awesome for me. Jason Tarver, just amazing to be able to walk down there and ask those guys, you know, questions. You know, guys have been in this league for a long time, just really put their arms around me and helped get me through the beginning of the stages and got the airplane off their runway, if you will. So
I remember watching Hard Knocks when it was the Jags, when Urban Meyer became the head coach. And I don't remember if you watched that season at all, but there was one of the things when he was mic'd up they had at the end of one of the first preseason games. He went over to the other head coach, and I want to say it was the Cowboys, but I'm not quite sure. He goes, "Man, it's just all football," right? You don't have to recruit. I mean, you obviously have to study and get ready for the draft and give your evaluations there, but it is. You are locked in on football 24/7.
No, I didn't see that episode, actually. I was probably recruiting, so I missed all that. But you're right. That's all you're doing. And coaches, I don't care where you're at, high school, college, the NFL, Pop Warner, we have a problem, and our problem is dead time, and we have to fill it with something. And in the league, you just fill it with more ball. So I think that's the difference, and I think that's what's fun about being in the league.
What was the difference in terms of not only from that standpoint, but then it's working with professionals, working with grown men, working with guys who do this and understand that they're doing this for a living to put food on the table for their families, as opposed to, you know, college kids that you've recruited and are still young, and there can be immature guys in the NFL as well, but working with professionals, and you certainly did with guys like Juan and Grant and Rodney and then Daron Harmon coming in, as well as some of the young guys.
I think that's the biggest jump and change, too, in terms of the room that you're dealing with from college to the NFL, is the true pro nature that you're dealing with in with the players. In college, you're grabbing guys, and you're recruiting for 4 years. You're in their high schools. They're coming in super underdeveloped. College is a developmental league. The NFL is to an extent, but there's just way more done early in college than you do in the NFL. These guys, especially the room that I deal with, is just highly developed. You know, Andrew Berry and his staff done a great job of bringing the right type of guys in that room, and I've been blessed being able to be, you know, part of that room and help those guys and help guide them to their where they want to go. So, yeah, definitely guys with 13 years of experience like Dew and Rod, 12, and Grant and Juan, who, you know, are really in their prime of their career. It's enjoyable, I will say. I'm not chasing them to class. I'm not wondering why they're missing from tutoring or where their homework is. They're just very urgent people and in a different mind state and point in their lives, which is fun to do.
All right, for you personally, what's something that you were really proud of that you were able to do in your first year as a position coach in the National Football League?
Probably the most proud for me moment or time frame was when, you know, when I remember walking into the training room right before December, right around that thick of the season, and seeing Rod laying on a table, Juan Thornhill laying on the other table, and then Grant Delpit laying on the table. And I just remember how important that part of the season was for our team. And just knowing that, you know, we had to come through as a group without those three guys. And to see the other guys step in and really just, in my opinion, just pick up where they left off. Like Coach, you know, like Kevin says, next man up. And we did that, you know, everyone chipped in, everybody. So really most proud of that part of the season, you know, to really help this group, this team, everyone in this building get to the playoffs despite having those three guys laying on the training room table at a really tough, really important part of the year. So probably the most proud moment was that just being able to come through for our team as a group for this team was rewarding.
Yeah, I mean, you think about that 4-game winning streak that really put this team into the playoffs, and you think about in Houston, Daron gets a pick. You think about the Bears, D'Anthony gets the pick that seals the game in one of the craziest plays that was full of ups and downs all in one play at the end of the Chicago game. And then Ronnie gets the pick six that sets things off Thursday night against the Jets. I mean, you can't tell that story without those guys. And, you know, in the case of really all three of them, probably not expected to really play this year.
No, and that was the thing, you know. But I will say this too, you know, I thought Jim did a great job. I remember one of his very first ever defensive meetings. When the roster was set, he told everyone in that room that they were going to play. And I remember sitting in the back like, you know, rookie NFL coach, like, everybody? And he was like, yeah, everybody. And they all played. And they all had to contribute in that room to help get to where we're going to go, which is why it's so important to make sure that you go into the season with the right people like AB and his staff did. And fill the roster and fill this team with the right people, because you're going to have to count on them all. And I will never forget that lesson that Jim taught us on that day, and it wound up coming true. So it was fun to see those guys come, you know, with the right mindset and prepare for that moment, which is what they did all year.
On the flip side of that, not something maybe that you were disappointed with, but something that you really learned that now going into year two, you feel like you're in such a better spot than maybe you were coming in year one.
You know, I just kind of had that moment a little while ago. I wasn't here at this time in the year a year ago, you know, so I wasn't, I was still going through the interview process with Kevin and AB and the Haslams. So just being here through the cut-up phase that I missed last year and being able to hear Jim talk through the things that he wants and the way that he wants it, but also just the intricacies of the other positions and how they all fit together. You know, I kind of joked about literally 20 minutes ago, I got here and Jim kind of handed me a playbook, 5 years of cut-ups, and then AB came by and handed a whole draft book of the draft. They said, all right, I'll see you after the draft. They kind of gave me a pat on the back, and I took off. So just being able to already be here and go through that process, but now to overlay it with an understanding of what they want and I've already been through it, I think that's the biggest lesson that I kind of went through. It was tough, but I'm happy that I'm here now with that past knowledge, but now, you know, getting to hear them, hear really Jim talk through it, you know, one-on-one is probably my most happiest I've been since I've been here.
Well, that's anyway, it certainly helps when you feel like you maybe have some of the answers to the test already.
Oh, shoot, yeah, way better. And unfortunately, some of the wrong answers, which is part of your ones. I know the wrong answers, so I know don't bubble in D here, go A. So I should be I'm excited about year two for sure, is just from a coach's perspective. And I'm watch the tape and I'm like, God, we could be so much better. So I'm excited already. What is it, the 14th of February? I can't wait for them to get back, which I'm sure if they hear this, they're gonna be like, oh God.
Well, I'm sure they're hungry too, right? This was a very magical season. It was a fun season, but as you pointed out, you know, Rod and Grant didn't get to participate late into the season. Juan got banged up as it went on, so I'm sure there's a lot of hunger there for you working with kind of that diverse group where you mentioned at various points you had a 13-year veteran, a 12-year veteran, you got guys in their prime, and you had the young guys who came in. Was that fun to kind of see, maybe not only as a coach, but just to kind as an observer in that room, see the interactions between the guys who had done it for a decade and then the guys who were just getting going?
You bring up a great point. And I brought this up to the – I think I put it in my end of the year notes. Yes, we had success when those guys went down. But the part that I think no one in the building really got to see was the decisions that were made to bring in guys like Daron Harmon and Rodney McLeod and even Juan and Grant who were down, you know, those guys really wrapped their arms around those young guys and helped the room get through that tough time. And, you know, Daron was playing, which was good, but he was still a 13-year vet that was able to kind of really help. He sat next to D-Bell the entire year when he got here and really helped coach him through, you know, those important games. And Rod, who, like I've told you a million times, is just a second coach in that room for me, was there, you know, and was present throughout the whole period of that stretch. And those guys were amazing for those young guys, helping them through. Juan, every meeting, you know, Grant fighting his butt off to get back, which is probably, you know, the biggest disappointment for me was just not giving Grant that chance to play a game, which is going to fuel us, you know, moving forward.
No doubt. And again, it was a great season. Special players, special moments, and the hunger is still there. It burns because we didn't accomplish the ultimate goal. Only one team gets to do that every single year. For you, coming out of it, you get to go down to the Senior Bowl. You get to be a defensive coordinator again. How was that for you, that experience, that honor, and then getting to go down there and do that?
Well, first and foremost, I'm definitely honored, you know, to be selected to do that by the NFL, by AB, Kevin. You know, this building, I was really excited to know that, you know, people felt that way about me in this building. It means a lot to me. But yes, I have a wolf inside, you know, I have a wolf inside that I need to feed in terms of doing things that I really was moving myself to do in college. You know, I was associate head coach. I've been a co-DC and defensive coordinator for the last 4 years. And now, you know, kind of coming back to a position coach and serving Jim and Kevin and AB in that role, I'm all locked in on. But it was nice to be able to go back and get back in that role and feed the wolf inside of me and to kind of get back in that seat, in that chair. I really appreciated it. It was good for me. It was good to kind of knock the dust off and do those things again, work with the staff that I had never worked with, players that I had never worked with. All jammed in a quick week, but it was an exciting, awesome experience, and I'm very, very grateful that I got to do that and really enjoy that process.
Troy Brown was there, right? Troy Brown.
Yeah, the Troy Brown.
Did you get to pick his brain at all, you know, as a guy who's been, you know, Super Bowl champion, played both ways even in a Super Bowl? That had to be pretty just that's a random – you never know who you're going to coach with, but that seems like a pretty cool one.
You know, it's funny. I'd met Troy when I had visited the Patriots and Coach Belichick a couple years back. So just really struck me as an awesome, personable human being. Great attitude glowed to him when I was in the Patriots building. you know, just for a couple days and got a chance to reconnect with him there. It was awesome. But just to be honest with you, it was really just surrounded on the defensive staff with great guys. You know, Justin Hamilton, who is now the assistant DB coach for the Colts. Justin Hines, who's the assistant D-line coach for the Bears. Kenny Norton Jr., Kenny Norton's son, was our corners coach. He's with the Bears. And then Rob Leonard, who's the D-line coach, you know, for the Raiders, who did obviously a great job with Crosby. So I just was excited to be around those guys and grow in there and with them and learn from them. That was probably the most rewarding. And then obviously just being with Big T, you know, everyone knows Big T in this league, and heard so many things from Jim about the type of person he was, our head coach on the American team. And he just really just was amazing to be around and to learn from in that week and to grow a relationship that I think we'll have forever. So it was an awesome experience to be around those great coaches.
What's kind of the thing that you would say you came out of there and took for, the number one thing you took from that experience?
I think the number one thing for me was just how much I miss being a coordinator. I'll be honest with you. Just to be honest.
Yeah. Listen, you have goals. Goal is, I'm sure, to be a coordinator and then be a head coach in this league, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think one step at a time, and you focus. You have to. I learned this listening to Coach Snyder, Kansas State Coach Snyder, years ago as a young GA. Be where your feet are planted, and I'm that type of guy. I'm always where my feet are planted. But yes, we all have goals and dreams and aspirations, and it was nice to kind of come out of that and just know that that's what I still wanted and have the opportunity and really the space to do that, to be where my feet were planted. We're there for the Senior Bowl. So it was nice to do that, came away from that. And then I think the other thing, too, was just to be around the college kids again. You know, their excitement, their juice, that twinkle in their eye where they're kind of nervous but at the same time excited. It was fun to kind of reconnect with what I've been doing for the last 13 years of my career was in that space. So that was really the two things.
It's an awesome experience. And you said you needed to feed that wolf, and I'm sure that wolf was very well fed. But probably a byproduct of that is it's going to feed your wolf as a scout, because I imagine you're going to have insights on everybody on that defensive side that Andrew Berry and the scouts are going to want. And I think it's one of those things, not only is it a great advantage for you to get that experience, it's a good advantage for our organization to have somebody who was there. Now you understand how they are in meetings. You understand the kind of questions they ask, the way that they see the game, the way they respond to coaching, all of that. So was that kind of a neat thing, because it gives you, I think, an elevated status on those guys in this building?
I think that was, you know, that was the, I tell the players this all the time, you should have your own self goals, but you also have to have your team goals, right? And my thought process coming out of that, or my aim was to come out of this serving our team with the most of information I could gather from this group of, you know, these college kids coming out. So yeah, it was great to get in there and to just see, you know, how they operated in the meeting rooms, how they took it from the meeting room to the field, and then not only that, from the field practice into the game. And then also just get to hear the questions they ask and how they learn, so that I could provide the best information I could for AB and his staff, you know, and to serve in that area was important to me. And I felt like I came out of it with as much information as I could to help our team through this process, and to make the best decisions possible. Sure. So it was awesome to do that, to get to experience that. Because I'll say this, you know, like, I believe doing this now and being at the combine was great too, and I think that serves its purpose. But ball is ball. And yeah. I really feel like that space and in that environment, you can really, really see who they are. Where in the combine, which is very important, they're still running around cones and hitting bags, but there's no shoulder pads on. There's no 300 or 700 people, 700 pounds of people laying on that tackle, and how is he going to react, and what is he going to do? And, you know, there's no corner running, you know, there's no receiver running at that corner, you know, at the combine. There's just the Senior Bowl provides those things, and I think that's what's awesome for football coaches and I think as well as personnel staff to see what they look like in that space.
All right, no names, obviously, but were there a couple people you came out of there with that would immediately come to mind that you're like, I'm going to pound the table for these guys to be Cleveland Browns?
Yeah, I've been pounding tables and knocking walls since I walked back in here for a couple of those guys, which is cool because some of the feedback I've heard, they're excited about those guys as well. So, yeah, can't name names, I won't, but definitely – got around some guys on our side of the ball that just was super excited about, and hopefully they're Browns.
I'd love to hear it. All right, we're going to end on this. It's been awesome. What's something that you want Browns fans to know? Because obviously I think they know now how much you love coaching, how much you love the guys, what your aspirations are. But just, you know, this is such an interesting business in the sense that the coaches don't get to be as well known in terms of who they are as a human being. So what's something that you would just want? When people hear the name, you know, Coach Banda, they know you're great with the safeties. They know you hope to be a DC and a head coach someday. But what's something you want them to know about just who you are? What makes you tick? What makes you you?
That's a great question. You don't think about those things often because you're always thinking about other people in this profession if you're doing it for the right reasons. And I think that's probably it. I love being here. I think Cleveland in this environment and the fans and the love for this organization has so many similarities to the world that I was from in college football. Like the passion that you see in the college game, you don't always see in the NFL. But this fan base, it's really been special to be around, and I am extremely honored to be a small part of that and to serve, you know, everyone in this city. So I think for me, I just think that if they know one thing about me, it's a servant mentality, that I'm honored to be here, excited. If you see me on the sideline, I know I look a little crazy sometimes, but it's just – I just feel like if everyone's going to pour that much passion into this place, then you should too.
Awesome. Coach Banda, thank you so much for the time.
Thank you. Appreciate you guys.
All right, we'll be back with more Cleveland Browns Daily brought to you by Ballybet right after this.
Cleveland Browns Daily brought to you by Ballybet, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
OBM, the preferred provider of copiers and document services for the Cleveland Browns, who can tackle any size office. Call 216-485-2000 or visit ohiobusinessmachines.com. I'm Jason Gibbs. Happy Friday, everybody. Hope you're getting ready for a good weekend. For a lot of you, a three-day weekend coming up, including for all of us on the Cleveland Browns Daily crew. We'll be off on Monday for President's Day, back with you on Tuesday. From last week's Super Bowl Radio Row and NFL Honors, head coach Kevin Stefanski joining the Rich Eisen Show the day after winning the NFL's Coach of the Year Award. Let's take a listen.
Hey, man, congratulations.
I appreciate it. As you know, I'm humbled, and you know, you feel great about these things because it reflects so much on the people around you. So it's an opportunity for me to talk about our coaching staff, our players, and really our whole operation in Berea.
Well, I mean, part of the reason why I believe you got this award, Coach, is obviously the number of wins. That's helpful, and making the playoffs, that is also helpful. But the way that you and your staff did somehow navigate five different starting quarterbacks, four of them in games that, you know, were one would say necessary for you to make the playoffs, the last one you were resting your team. How are you able to negotiate the season with so many different changes at the most important position?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great word, navigate, because it felt like that a bunch this season, and taking twists and turns. And, you know, you never know. Preseason, I tell the coaches all the time, we have no idea what's coming at us. There's just going to be something that's coming. And a lot of times it's injuries. And I think back to, you know, week one, we lose Jack Conklin, our starting tackle. Week two, we lose Nick Chubb, you know, our all-world running back. And, you know, what I got from our coaches and from our players is nobody blinked. They were a bunch of problem solvers. And that's what I challenge the coaches week in and week out, is how do we win this game? And when you say that, you're talking about who's available to you that week. And, you know, the different quarterbacks, that was different. And, you know, credit to our coaches and credit to those players, because you have to evolve as an offense when you're going from, you know, Deshaun and some of the things you're doing with Deshaun, and obviously you go to Joe, you're going to change what you do because you're trying to play to the strengths of your players. So that was all credit goes to that coaching staff and the players.
How does one in your position keep the next man up mentality and the competition behind the scenes as intense as it probably needs to be, and keep everyone together? How does one create that environment?
Well, it is so cliche, Rich, next man up. We try to live it by making sure that next man stays ready so they don't have to get ready. We look at everybody as a starter, and we have our coaches, you know, you got to develop the third guy on the depth chart because number three becomes number one pretty quickly in the NFL. So it's really being intentional about developing our guys, being intentional from our player standpoint of never thinking that they're, you know, hey, this is, I'm a rookie, it's a redshirt season. That really doesn't exist in the NFL. So the mentality in our building is always to stay ready so you don't have to get ready.
And obviously it is helpful to have, say, a defensive player of the year and comeback player of the year on your roster as well. What was your perspective of watching Myles Garrett do what he did this season?
Yeah, I'm a better coach with Myles Garrett on the field, if you can believe it. You know, for me, I have the best seat in the house. I get to, when we're on defense, I'm watching Jim Schwartz operate, and then I'm watching Myles go to work. And I've seen it for 4 years up close to see how he is on Sundays, and I know our fans in the NFL world have seen it. I really believe Myles took a step this past season in terms of how hard he works, how he leads this football team, was elected captain by the team, and just to see him go and how he operated. And when we needed a play, he was making a play. You know, we talked earlier about that Indianapolis game. We go to Indy, he's blocking field goals, he's getting safeties. I mean, it was incredible. It was like you don't often see a guy take over a game when they're a defensive player, and he took over games. And I can speak from an offensive coach's perspective. When you're game planning, everything you do is trying to make sure Myles Garrett doesn't wreck the game, and he still wrecked games. And I think that's why he's more than deserving to be Defensive Player of the Year.
Kevin Stefanski, the now two-time NFL Coach of the Year, joining us here on the Rich Eisen Show, live before the Super Bowl here in Las Vegas. What was your conversation with Joe Flacco like when you first picked up the phone and he's looking down and he's trying to figure out what that area code might be on his phone? And then we saw what happened. What was that conversation like?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind with that conversation, Rich, is Joe is from South Jersey, just outside of Philly. I'm from Philly. Mm-hmm. So when I'm talking to Joe, I'm hearing the Philly accent. And I felt like I was talking to a cousin or a brother or a guy I went to high school with. And then we bring him in, and same idea. Just talking to him, he has that Audubon, New Jersey, that accent has not left him. And Joe's a pro's pro, man. You know, when we first signed him, it wasn't a foregone conclusion that he was going to be our starter. He was on our practice squad. And we just felt like we needed depth there. And then sure enough, had some injuries, and he's in there. But, man, that guy, the way he prepares, the way he is around the building, in the locker room, gives his teammates such great confidence. Because there is an air of, I've been there, I've done that, a Super Bowl winner. So it was fun, again, for me to be a part of that and just watch him operate.
And then before I let you go here, Coach, you mentioned how you felt like it sounded like you were talking to a family member when you were talking to Flacco. I know your dad's name is Ed. I don't believe any of your kids are named Steve. Did you get confused when the award was announced for Steven Stefanski on Thursday night? Did that hit
well,
you?
Well, the truth is, Rich, my cousin Steve had a great night last night. his phone was blowing up, and we called him right away. And his words, he literally picks up the phone and he says to me, "I did it. Hard work pays off."
So wait a minute, you do have a cousin named Steve Stefanski?
That is amazing.
You do?
Oh yeah, Steve Stefanski and Phil. You know what, Rich? I'll get if
That's
you
awesome.
Want. I could merge Steve onto this call if you want, if we have time.
You know what? I was told he was not available last night to accept, but that had talk about a curveball. But hey, it's all the Stefanskis won last night. You know what I mean? I love it.
That's right. And I won't, whatever show that actor was promoting, I'm not watching it.
you're not available either.
Wow.
Okay. Hey, you stand on principle, Coach. That's why you're a two-time Coach of the Year. You know what I'm saying?
Hey, guys, stand for something.
Coach having some fun with the great Rich Eisen. We look forward to seeing both of those guys in about a week and a half in Indianapolis at the NFL's Scouting Combine. We'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, it's offensive coordinator Ken Dorsey's introductory press conference. You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, a sports betting partner of your Cleveland Browns, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet. Now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Elk & Elk, serious lawyers for serious injuries. Call 1-800-ELK-OHIO for your free case review. Elk & Elk, a proud partner of your Cleveland Browns. I'm Jason Gibbs on this Football Friday edition of the program. Coming up, you'll hear from Nathan Zagura as he breaks down the Browns running back room in our position review segment. You'll also hear from special teams assistant coach Stephen Bravo Brown. You are not going to want to miss this. Some really good stuff with Bravo Brown and Z. Right now, part one, it's offensive coordinator Ken Dorsey's introductory press conference from about 2 weeks ago, as Ken Dorsey gets introduced to the Cleveland Browns fans and the Cleveland media.
Okay, going to introduce Ken Dorsey here in a second. You know, just want to address some of the changes we've made to the offensive staff and, you know, talk through that. I'm really proud of the things that we've accomplished the last 4 years, and I just want to address T.C. McCartney, Stump Mitchell, huge parts of that success. We did a lot of really good things over the last 4 years together, and I'm proud of that and their big parts of that. Alex Van Pelt, you guys know how I feel about AVP, the person, the coach, very, very happy for him to be able to run that offense in New England. I know he'll do a great job. Bill Callahan, you know, very unique situation there to go work for Brian, not with Brian. He's going to work for Brian. You know, I can't wait for Brian to boss him around. The dream of every kid is to boss their parents around. So happy for those guys. Again, I think organizationally we realize that's a unique situation and did not want to stand in the way of that. And you know, so excited for certainly Brian and Bill down there. You know, when we made this decision very early on, Ken was a guy that we identified that could help us, help me, you know, be an integral part of this offense. And Ken and I have known each other a little while. We've kind of come up in this profession together, if you will. Just watching Ken in college, in the pros, having success as a player, having success as a coach. You know, he really fits who we are culturally. He's a family man. His daughters are very important to everything he's doing. He's been in, I think, how many volleyball games this weekend? Yeah, quite a few. So, but a really a smart person who fits us from a culture standpoint, just has had a ton of success really every stop along the way, and really pleased to add Ken to this group. Play calling, which I know everybody wants to talk about, we'll get there. It's February 5th. What's most important, what I'm looking forward to the most, is putting this offense back together with Ken, really leading the charge, and that's why he's here, and really pleased to have him here, and with that, I'll introduce Ken Dorsey.
First and foremost, I just want to thank, you know, the Haslam family, Andrew Berry, Kevin, and everybody here for this opportunity. This is really, for me, one of the most exciting opportunities I've had, you know, to come back here, be a part of this, not only because of just the opportunity to coach here, but how great the organization is from a human being standpoint and a person, people in this building standpoint. So I'm very excited about that. I'm extremely excited to work with this offense, especially, you know, Deshaun and him being one of the top quarterbacks in this league. The opportunity to really go out there this season and help him prove that, you know, he really is that, you know, a top quarterback in this league that can operate and help us win a bunch of football games. So I'm super excited about that opportunity and really looking forward to this challenge. And, you know, not only with him, but this whole unit that is clearly, you know, done a lot of great things, you know, throughout Kevin's time here and really evolved into a special group that can really go out and show that we could be a top offense in this league.
We'll open up questions.
Ken, first of all, welcome back.
Thank you.
Do you have any flashbacks coming back into the building or Berea?
Not really, since it's changed so much. You know, it's I'm telling people, I think the only thing that's same is the staircase in the front and the door I walk through. You know, other than that, the place is completely different and in a great way. You know, and just walking in here, it's like the vibe is just so much different than when I was here, you know, as a player. And that's the fun part about it for me. It's just like when you walk into a building and you're excited to come into work every day. I mean, that's something that's, you know, invaluable, and just a very welcoming thing for me.
You're a quarterback, former quarterback, obviously, mm-hmm. played at the highest level. You've had success in coaching quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. Initially, what is kind of your role in, you mentioned Deshaun before, in kind of getting him to be the player that everybody hopes he can be here?
I mean, one, it's working together hand in hand, you know, and it's I think the first thing is, obviously, you know, we go through and we evaluate the season, and we have honest conversations, and hey, we look at tape and we watch what you know, what we did on the field, and say, hey, this is our standard and this was good enough, and this maybe didn't live up to our standard. And I think that's the exciting thing about Deshaun, is like, you know, from everything I've been told from, you know, Kevin and the guys here, this guy, you know, he wants to be coached. You know, he wants to be, you know, pushed and driven. And, you know, I think I'll be able to pick up, you know, where the staff has left off on that. And I think they've done a great job here throughout time. It's clear what we've been capable of doing in the past few years. And now, you know, to pick that up with Deshaun and really get going and, you know, obviously evaluate those things and then go in and let's build a great base of fundamentals that we can depend on throughout the year and make sure we're doing those things that, you know, come the fourth quarter of games, like we've still got a great base that'll help us be accurate. And, you know, when things get a little messy, we could still rely on those things and deliver accurate throws and make great decisions. So that's half the battle. Our job in the quarterback room is to go out, score points and help us win football games, whether it's 1 point or 20 points or whatever, you know, and I think when you got a guy like him, he's going to help you do that.
Ken, what do you
experience with dual threat quarterbacks, mm-hmm. two famous ones? You had the exact opposite of the way you played the game.
What?
I mean, how have you been able to take advantage of those two quarterbacks' skills?
Yeah, I think the understanding of those guys can do things that a lot of people can't, you know. And look, at the same time, there's going to be some times, and I've been through it with Cam and with Josh, where, you know, they're gonna make unbelievable plays that everybody's gonna be like, that's amazing. But then there's gonna be, you know, times that, hey, you know, we scramble around and we might take a sack or something like that, and it's like, well, just throw the ball. Well, you know, sometimes there's a give and take there, but it's the understanding of, okay, we've got to make sure we're playing smart, not conservative in terms of what we're doing. And we're doing the things that, you know, we're taking chances and we're extending plays and we're doing things in a way that, you know, isn't going to be detrimental for us as a team and us as an offense. And so it's a balancing act there with those guys, but the understanding of knowing that, like, these guys can do a lot of things that other people can't. And there's some give and take there when those things happen. And you know what? Hey, if there's a bad play, hey, okay, wash that one. Let's move on to the next one. Not only him, but the whole offense, you know. And that's offensive football. You know, it's a long game, and there's going to be good and bad. It's, hey, let's focus on this play every single play and come back and get this one.
And what happened in Buffalo this past year?
I mean, look, at the end of the day, the head coach decided to make a change, and that's, you know, that's something that, you know, I've turned the page on. I'm really excited to be here and more focused on this opportunity than what happened there.
Just to follow up along mm-hmm. that, so what do you take from – it looks like that's the first time you've been fired, I guess, for now.
Carolina. I got let go in Carolina.
What do you take from that you bring to here?
Well, I think one of the big things was that it gave me time to kind of go back and look at, okay, you know, here's what we did. Here's what we were doing schematically and how we were utilizing our personnel and really evaluate what we were doing. And when I did, I felt like there was a lot of great things that we were doing. And, you know, yeah, there's always things that, hey, maybe I'd do this a little bit differently, you know, kind of moving forward. And but again, when you make those decisions, every opportunity is very unique as well, too. So, hey, you know, no matter what, when I'm coming here, you're going to evolve and do some things differently because your personnel and the system and the different things are also changing. But I think you look back and you say, okay, you know, were we on the right track? Were we doing the things that I felt like at the end of the day as a, you know, leader of the offense and the play caller was giving us, you know, the best chance to win? In a lot of cases, you know, there was a lot of yeses, and sometimes it was, you know, in certain situations, maybe I would do something a little different here.
How important is play calling to you? And if Kevin retains that chore, how can you impact the game in the way
you need? Play calling to me is, you know, not as important as winning football games. You know, to me, it's more about, all right, what's the decision that we feel most comfortable about moving forward to help our team win? And I've been, you know, in my career, more interested about, okay, what can I do to help this team win, you know, more so than anything else. And that's the only thing that matters to me. So whether Kevin's calling it, I'm calling it, you know, that's, to me, you know, the most important thing is us as a team. So now if Kevin's calling, what can I do? I could do my job to as high of an ability as humanly possible. I could get Deshaun ready to play each and every week. I can get our room ready to play each and every week because we got a great room, and I'm sure we'll add to that. You know, and then I could help develop a game plan that's going to help us be multiple, attack a defense in different ways, be aggressive, you know, and be, you know, elite in what we do. And that's the most important thing to me, you know, just doing that to make sure if I'm in that role, hey, I'm going to do that at an extremely high level.
Have you spoken with Deshaun since you've been hired?
Yeah, so I was able to have a conversation with them, and it was great. You know, we're in the phase, obviously, in the off season of just more getting to know each other and that type of thing. So it was great to talk to him. I look forward to, you know, having more conversations, just get to know him, get to know the guy, get to know the person, you know, and a lot of these guys, you know, in the building. So, but it was really good to get him on the phone and just kind of, you know, initial conversations, and I can't wait to get to work with him because, again, he's one of the premier quarterbacks in this league, and from everything I've heard about him, a really quality human being. So I'm just excited about that opportunity.
And how do you think your time with Cam and Josh, with the, you know, the ability to run, how do you think that can help Deshaun? And I know they're not, you know, exactly the same body types, but
no.
How similar do you think they are?
I mean, that's the thing. Every quarterback is, you know, people looked and saw, you know, Cam and Josh and said, oh, they're the same. They were very unique and different players in a lot of ways. So every one of these guys is so unique. No one's the same guy, whether it's, you know, the mental, you know, kind of how they see the game versus how they play the game, versus kind of just their personality. So everybody's unique in those types of ways. But, you know, some of the things that you can do, you know, stays the same. You know, their ability to get outside the pocket, create, make plays, third down, extend plays, and you know, put a defense in a bind, you know. And there's some teams that affects kind of how they call the game and how they, you know, game plan their rushes and their blitzes and those types of things, you know, because you got a guy that can hurt them if he gets outside the pocket or breaks contain. So, again, every one of these guys is very different. But I think there's things you could take away, you know, whether it's the run game, the zone read game, the RPO game, because all those things, a lot of times you can't necessarily teach them. It's a natural feel that these guys have. And watching Deshaun, he clearly has a great feel for a lot of different aspects of football. Whether it's scheme-wise for us, instincts of what he sees on the field in terms of the defense and adjusting things. But I think that's the exciting part about working with him is getting back to the elite level that he's of who he is.
Ken, how do you view the state of the offensive system as you come in here? How much of an overhaul do you think you and Kevin are going to be working together on this offseason to bring out more from Deshaun that we've seen so far?
Well, I think the, I mean, that's part of the excitement for me coming here. I mean, you watch this offense on film, and there's a lot of exciting things about it, not only from a player standpoint, but, you know, what we're doing in creativity and different ways to attack a defense standpoint. So I think there's a lot of exciting things that we've done. And then obviously, you know, every year, whether it's me coming in new this year, but every year you look to evolve and to evaluate and change. Hey, do we like this? No, take it out. You know, do we want to add this? Yeah, add it. You know what I mean? And there's always that evolution that you look to try to stay ahead of the curve. So that's going to happen. But I think that's the exciting part to come in now is to be a part of that and blend these kind of two different philosophies, you know, and incorporate different things that maybe we did in Buffalo or Carolina or whatnot. And then obviously we've got some other coaches who are coming in who are going to be able to add their, you know, from their experiences as well. And that's the exciting part. I mean, that's what makes ball fun, is to come in and really kind of roll up your sleeves and say, okay, you know, where do we want to go? And then in the course of the year, you know, you're still learning yourself in training camp and, you know, throughout the off-season program and into training camp and really the first couple weeks of the season. You know, that's when things start defining, you know, kind of who you are from an identity standpoint, you know, because when you look at free agency, draft, and all those things, it takes time to, you know, work all those pieces. You know, are we going to be an 11 team, a 12 team, a 21 team? You don't know. You can't say that right now because we don't have the roster. And that's the fun part about the NFL. is you got time to figure that out, and there's going to be a process that we go through to do so.
Hour one is in the books. Hour two comes your way next, and we'll kick it off with Nathan Zagura breaking down the Browns running back room in our position review segment of the day. I'm Jason Gibbs, and you're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, a sports betting partner of your Cleveland Browns, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Chubb lined up in the backfield next to Watson, who is in the pistol. Three receivers left. Chubb gets it up the middle, cuts up to the 35, the 40, the 45, keeps himself going up near the 50-yard line. The Browns have another first down, and you can hear the Browns fans starting to make themselves known.
Yeah, so you're in that shotgun look. The Browns saw that the Steelers were in a light box, but what they tried to do was bring Minkah Fitzpatrick up in a run blitz. And when you do that, if you're in the wrong gap, the running back's able to run right by you. Nick Chubb did that very effectively. Big gain of 20 yards.
Yeah, of course. Like you said, with the loss of Nick going down, I think everybody had like that pride in them, like, we're going to go out and we're going to do everything we can to win this week for Nick and, you know, to get back on track.
Watson looking down the left side. He's got a wide open throw for a touchdown. It's Ford to Watson's left. The give to Ford. No. Yes, Ford up the middle. Jerome Ford at the 50. Colts territory 40. It's a foot race. 20. 10. Ford is not going to get caught. He's into the end zone. A 69-yard touchdown run.
And just like that, the Browns are on the board. You want to start fast against this team. That's how you start fast.
We did it for him, man. Nick is a brother. You know, everybody wanted to win this for him, too. And, you know, we definitely miss him out there. You know, the person and the teammate, the player he is. But we got to keep finding a way to, you know, win games.
Browns from the one, this is the game. Out of the eye, they need the touchdown. Hunt and Harris. Walker gives to Kareem Hunt. Pushing, touchdown! Kareem Hunt got it across the goal line!
Kareem Hunt, are the cardiac kids back? Kareem Hunt getting it over the goal line. The huge touchdown on fourth down. You knew you could run it at that point. It didn't matter. That was the last play. Wow, what a surge over the left side of that line behind your five-time Pro Bowl guard, Joel Bitonio.
Let's see on the replay. Did he get there? Initially, his progress stopped. Yes, he did. That ball, that elbow is on the goal line. That should stand. And with 15 seconds to go, the Browns lead 39-38. Walker motions out of the backfield. Kareem alone in the backfield. Direct snap. Kareem Hunt running, spinning, scoring. Touchdown, Browns.
That was something the Browns had worked on all week. They thought they could get a good look if they took the quarterback out. Direct snap to Kareem Hunt. And congratulations to Kareem Hunt. That is the 50th touchdown of his career, his second rushing touchdown in as many weeks.
Walker in the pistol with Pierre Strong lined up behind him. Play fake. Walker looks right. He's going to throw it back left to Strong on the screen. He's got some space. 45-50, 45-40, 35-30, inside the 25 and the 20 before Reek Woolen pushes him out of bounds for the Browns' biggest play of the game.
I like Pierre Strong. I like his acceleration. You could see once he got the ball in his hand, he really was able to take off. And again, good play design because you had the one receiver out there, Goodwin. He ran a deep post. That took the deep defenders out, which is why there was so much space here on that left sideline for Pierre Strong.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Bally Bet, sports betting partner of your Cleveland Browns. Nathan Zagura breaking down the running back room. What we saw in 2023 and what we will see in 2024. Now, 2023, that wasn't the running back room any of us expected. We all expected it to be Nick Chubb leading the way for the Cleveland Browns. Chubb, the consummate professional. Chubb, the best running back in the National Football League. Prior to the 2023 season, he was coming in on four straight Pro Bowls, four straight 1,000-yard seasons, five straight seasons with at least eight touchdowns. And in 2022, career high in carries, career high 1,525 yards, career high 12 rushing touchdowns, career high in basically every category. 13 total touchdowns, that was also a career high. 1,764 total yards, eight short of a career high. So did he have an unbelievable year? Yes. He had four straight Pro Bowls. He was a second-team All-Pro in 22. And so 2023 started with great optimism for what Nick Chubb could be for the Cleveland Browns. And I'll tell you what, it looked like it was going to be every bit as good as we thought it might be. Nick Chubb goes down for the season in week two, in the first half of week two, and in a six quarters of action. He had 28 carries for 170 yards. He averaged 6.1 yards per carry, four catches for 21. So basically 191 total yards in just six quarters, averaging what would have been a career high, 6 yards per touch, 6.1 yards per carry. But he was lost in Pittsburgh in devastating fashion, a season-ending injury, and we're still not even sure if he'll be ready for the start of 2024. So what did the Browns have to do to make up for the loss of Nick Chubb? Well, they turned to their fifth-round draft pick from a year ago, Jerome Ford. Jerome Ford, I don't think people remember, only had eight carries for 12 yards in that rookie season. Well, he had to become the guy and become the guy quickly. He actually filled in and ran for more than 100 yards in that first game against the Steelers when Nick Chubb went down. For the season, Ford had run for 204 times for 813 yards with four touchdowns, averaged 4 yards a carry. He would also give you 44 catches for 319 yards and five receiving touchdowns. He was second on the team, tied with Amari Cooper, with five receiving touchdowns this year, 1,132 yards and nine touchdowns. They would have to turn to a very familiar face, bringing back Kareem Hunt. Kareem Hunt, who was on his couch, much like Joe Flacco was when we talked about it in the quarterback position review, so was Kareem Hunt. And Kareem came back, and he gave such an emotional lift to this team. He was the hammer at the goal line. You think about Kareem Hunt running the ball in at the end of the game on fourth down against Indianapolis. Kareem Hunt would run for 411 yards and a career-high nine rushing touchdowns, more than he rushed for at any point. The Browns also traded for Pierre Strong. Pierre Strong would actually lead this team in yards per carry. So you had Jerome Ford lead the team in rushing yards and total yards. You had Kareem Hunt tied for the team lead the team in rushing touchdowns, and then Pierre Strong led the team in yards per carry. And I like Pierre Strong. He's fast. 63 carries, 291 yards, a touchdown that came in that game against Pittsburgh. 4.6 yards a carry to lead this football team. He averaged 5 yards a touch. That was the best among all the running backs outside of Nick Chubb. And so it was a three-headed monster. And if we said to ourselves, we're not going to have Nick Chubb, and what did I say? Nick Chubb last year, 1,700 total yards, 13 touchdowns. That this group of Jerome Ford, Kareem Hunt, and Pierre Strong, that they would combine to give you basically 2,000 total yards and 19 total touchdowns, you would have said there's no way. But that's exactly what this team did. They found a way. The next man stepped up. And so what you ultimately ended up having was a remarkable performance by guys that were not expected to do anything other than be role players. And in the case of Pierre Strong and Kareem Hunt, two guys who weren't even at the Greenbrier with the Browns, guys who didn't really figure into your plans. Kareem Hunt wasn't with the team on week one. And yet they came in and they were able to do that and give this team some consistency, some production, and some splash plays. I mean, you know, Jerome Ford, the 69-yard touchdown run against the Indianapolis Colts. You had the catch and run of 50 yards for the touchdown against the Jets in the clincher. Kareem punching it in whenever he got the opportunity. Strong making some big plays. So they did a great job. So the question then becomes, what will it look like in 2024? Well, here's what's the deal. Chubb, Ford, Strong, John Kelly on the reserves list, they're all under contract. Ford and Strong are in the third years of their rookie deal. Nick Chubb is in the last year of his deal. And I think you heard Andrew Berry say, we don't know what his injury status is, when he'll be ready, but that they will do everything to keep him on this roster. When you say something like that, it feels like that means that they're going to have to perhaps restructure and extend his contract. His cap hit in 2024, $15.8 million. And we don't know if that'll be for a full season or what. So my guess is the Browns will try to lower that number for this season, extend it out to the future, and keep Nick Chubb here with the Cleveland Browns. So number one, what happens with him on the contract front? That's a big part of it. And then the second part is, what happens with Nick Chubb after sustaining what was a devastating injury? And now he came back from one at Georgia. Can he come back from one again? He's a little bit older now. But Nick Chubb is the one person I would never bet against because his work ethic. We've seen him around the facility. He looks great. He is hungry to be back. And you want to see him return to that form of being the best running back in the NFL, because as good as our runners were, and there were some big plays, we were not the dangerous running team that we were with Nick Chubb, because he was simply that good. Nick Chubb always leads the league in runs of more than 10 yards, always leads the league in runs of more than 20 yards. So we didn't have really that home run element to this game. So that's where we are right now. Will the team, and then you got Kareem Hunt as a free agent, and you wonder what his future looks like. I know he wants to be back, and I certainly think there's a role for him as an emotional, spiritual leader and as that goal line hammer. Kareem Hunt wasn't going to run for 20, 30 yards. In fact, his long run on the season was 16 yards, but he was going to get you 3 yards every time. He was going to get you over the line of scrimmage, fourth and one if you needed that, at the goal line if you needed it. Kareem Hunt would not be denied. And so there is value there. We'll see if maybe Kareem Hunt is back with the Cleveland Browns, or if this team decides to add another running back via the draft. You've got two young guys I mentioned, Ford and Strong, fifth and fourth rounders from 2 years ago, respectively. You got Chubb, and then we'll see what happens around those guys. As for Jerome Ford, what does he need to do to take the next step forward in his career? I think he's got to get north and south a little bit more. I think he's got to be able to minimize the negative runs. I think too often hit behind the line of scrimmage, too often negative plays. And I think if he can take that negative plays, reduce those, add a few more home runs, he's shown the ability. He can catch it, 44 catches, 319 yards, 5 touchdowns. We know he can run it as well, 813 yards. That Jerome Ford could be an excellent complement to what we see with a returning Nick Chubb next season. Another question in this running back room is about Pierre Strong. He's a guy that I liked. I was unabashed in it because you could see that acceleration. You could see that burst. Other than Nick Chubb, Pierre Strong, as I said, led this team in yards per carry at 4.6, led the team in yards per touch, and he led the team in rushing success rate. And this is one of the things that I think they're really going to look at. Jerome Ford, by example, 39.7% success rate. Kareem Hunt, 45.9%. Strong, 51%. Nick Chubb, 57%. Ford's got to eliminate those negative runs that detract from that success rate, whereas Pierre Strong got to hold on to the ball. We saw him put it on the ground only once, but it was at a critical moment. You got to hold on to the ball. And really, it's more for him the seasoning, learning the offense. He didn't have the benefit of a full offseason. He's a wild card to me. Pierre Strong's a guy that perhaps with a full offseason to get integrated into this offense, that perhaps he has a higher ceiling because of that burst, that speed. He was the fastest running back in the 2023 NFL Combine. He shows that home run ability for his career is well over 5 yards per carry. And so Pierre Strong is a guy that maybe with the benefit of a full offseason, he's somebody that could take a big, big step forward now in his second season with the Browns. And if the Browns, with bringing in Ken Dorsey, are maybe going to go a little more spread-oriented, he is a dangerous player in space. Good hands catching it. He can run it, as I said, for his career, 5.4 yards per carry. So there it is. That's a look at the running back room. Our final question here in the Browns running back room review is, on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being the lowest, 10 being the highest, the priority in upgrading this room. And I think that's a tough question to ask, because if Nick Chubb comes back and is healthy and is even 80% of who Nick Chubb was prior, the room is instantly upgraded, right? Because you've got Nick Chubb and the greatness that he provides. I do think it is a room you have to look at. I think the Browns will be judicious with their resources. So that means maybe Nick Chubb taking a little bit of a restructure to lower his cap number for this year, and then perhaps you add another guy in the draft or you add a free agent veteran on the minimum. I don't expect a lot of resources to be added here. The other way they could go, though, is if there's a running back that they love who's there in the second round and they try to find, you know, the next Nick Chubb, I could see the Browns doing that as well. So is it a huge priority? No, because as I said before, you got basically 2,000 total yards and 19 touchdowns from your running backs even without Nick Chubb. But I do think getting Nick Chubb back instantly makes the room better, even if he's not 100% of what he was before. And then we'll see how Andrew Berry moves around that. At the end of the day, the running back position, while very, very important, is not one that the Browns, given where their money has been allocated elsewhere, are going to be able to have a huge expenditure. So there isn't going to be a big name that's added to that room. It's either going to be a draft pick on a rookie deal, or it's going to be a veteran, I think, around the league minimum, joining Chubb, Ford, and Pierre Strong. That's a look at the Browns running backs here on Cleveland Browns Daily. We'll be back right after this on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, sports betting partner of your Cleveland Browns, now live in Ohio. Very happy, I believe, first time ever, joined in studio by Browns assistant special teams coach Stephen Bravo Brown. Stephen, man, how you doing? Good to have you here.
Doing well, man. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. It's an honor to be here. A lot of good stuff on your radio show, so I'm glad to be a part of it.
We're certainly honored to have you as well. Before we talk into what you've done recently, let's just go back and take a look at this season, because it was a pretty magical season and some pretty impressive performances by the Browns special teams units as well. What did you kind of make of this season, your first working with, you know, Bubba Ventrone?
Yeah, so first of all, Bubba does a great job schematically, personnel-wise, organizational-wise. He does a great job, so it was a great, you know, change-up for me and just to learn under him. Season-wise, I mean, I feel like we revitalize our season, especially with the scheme and the players that we put in position to make plays. Players like Mike Ford and, you know, Miles Garrett on the field goal block unit, Matt Adams, those guys really helped revitalize our special teams unit for 2023.
And those are some of the guys you first went out and got, Mike Ford, Matt Adams, that you mentioned. As soon as Bubba was hired, it was like those two guys were in the mix here. When you have guys that are core special teams players like that who are there and they're able to raise, you know, the bar for everybody around them.
Yeah, I think that's beneficial and significant for us to have as a special team unit. I mean, you think about it as the quarterback of the offense. When you have a leader at the helm and someone that everyone could rely on, someone that everyone looks to when times are hard, I think that's crucial for a special teams unit as well.
So we are doing the Brownie Awards at the end of the year. And one of the things we're doing, we did the best games, and then now we're doing the best plays of the year. And you mentioned Miles earlier. Well, the Miles Garrett field goal block against Indianapolis is probably going to win this thing. When I'll tell you a little bit back. So Bubba did his press conference that Thursday downstairs, and he would always come up here, and then he'd come in here and chop it up with us for a little bit. And he told me we're blocking a kick that game. And ironically, I said to him, I was like, why don't we ever try Miles? Just not knowing anything, obviously. And he didn't give anything away. He's just like, we're going to block a kick this week. And I'm like, okay. And then you go to the game. He called the shot. You get the block. He jumps over the line in one of the most unbelievable athletic feats I've ever seen. How fun was that, kind of putting that in and then seeing it come to reality and him actually doing it?
Yeah, so that's actually a good point. This is what I want everyone to understand, too. That's a special teams play. That's not a defensive play. Okay, yeah. That's a special teams play.
Absolutely.
So we walk through that play. First of all, we install it. We tell them exactly this is what we want you guys to do. This is how it looks. This is the hand placement. This is where you have to jump. This is the aiming point. We walk through it, we jog through it, and we practice it three or four times like throughout the week. And to see it happen in the game exactly how, you know, we planned it is very – like it was a great feeling. I just wish Denzel would have picked it up and scored.
Yeah.
But it was a great result and definitely helped us win the game. So,
did he come to you and he was like, look, I can do this? Like, how did we get to the point where we decided we were going to walk through and we were going to actually do this? Because somebody said, yeah, I'm just going to just jump over everybody. But, okay. But it is Miles Garrett saying it.
Yeah, so – we already had it predetermined that's what we're going to do, especially this week. You know, Bubba going back to play his former team. He knew what they were vulnerable to give up, especially in that gap that Miles jumped over. And it's just something that we saw on film, and he planned it. And Miles is the perfect guy to do it. They wouldn't expect it, and he did it. So
unbelievable. And then later in the year, he almost got a couple coming around the edge, which is crazy when you think about a defensive end being able to do that. But I think he blocked 9 kicks 1 year in high school. He's just different.
He's a freak. So anywhere you put that guy, he's going to make a play. So, and that's what we want to do, especially on our field goal block unit, is put him in a position to make a game-changing play.
How cool is it, though, that you have somebody like Miles Garrett, the defensive player of the year, multiple-time Pro Bowler, first-team All-Pro. You've got Denzel, who's a multiple-time Pro Bowler, saying, yeah, we want to be a part of special teams. We're not above it. We want to be a part of it. And both of them have been very, very good at it over the course of their careers.
For sure. It's a good feeling, especially, like, even – like Denzel, like how you mentioned, he's like, man, I'm ready to go, put me in a position to block this ball. You know what I mean? I think it's that feeling of guys want to be on the unit, like, permeates throughout the building, and guys are coming up to us. Like, even Shelby Harris, hey, man, put me in a position to get a block. Like, those guys want to be at the point of attack. And Shelby got a block in that, I forgot which game it was. And yep, there you go, Jets game. He wanted to be in that position, and then Bubba and I put him in that position, and he literally got a block on that play. So guys want to be on a unit, and they want to make plays, and it's a good feeling, and that should carry over into our next season as well. So
you enjoyed this season?
Oh yeah, it was a good season for sure.
It was a great season. It was, in many ways, it was a very magical season. And now for you, obviously, with this special teams unit, you got some recognition, an opportunity to be the special teams coordinator for the West team in the East-West Shrine game. How did that come about, and tell me about that experience?
Yeah, first of all, the experience was great. I got a chance to connect with a lot of different coaches from around the NFL. I got a chance to implement how I would install a special teams unit. I got a chance to talk to the players and be with them firsthand and go through the teaching progression of, okay, this is punt, this is punt return, this is field goal, this is field goal block. So it was a great experience for me, just talking to an entire unit, implementing my plan, and then going out and seeing them execute it. So it was definitely a great experience.
No names, please, but did you find some, like, gems that you're going to go maybe pound the table for? Because DeAnthony Bell came via Coach Jeff Howard from the East-West Shrine game a few years ago. Is there a Stephen Bravo Brown? Like, you got a few favorites?
There's two guys that come to my mind right away. I will not say their names, but there's two guys that come to my mind right away.
That's awesome. And that's kind of one of the perks of it, not only for you to get to coach, but it is an advantage for this organization as well, that you're like, no, look, I've seen it. This guy, he can do it.
For sure, for sure. And I think, like, if anyone has any opinions on anything or they want my opinion on something, just being able to work with those guys firsthand and being in a meeting with them and on a practice field with them is definitely, like, beneficial for us because, you know, I got the firsthand experience.
Absolutely.
So anybody has any questions, come to me.
Come to Stephen Bravo Brown. What's so Bubba Ventrone comes in, and you've been here since 2020. So you're with Coach Prefer, obviously, a venerable special teams coordinator, and then Bubba comes in, who had been very, very good, obviously, in Indianapolis. Obviously, that's a change for you, even though your role stays the same. How was kind of that transition, and what was it like working with Bubba?
Yeah, so when I first came in, initially I was on defense, so I was working with Joe Woods, and I worked with him for 2 years. Then I had to transition to working with Preef, and then this year I transitioned to working with Bubba.
And you started in the league, if I'm not saying, with receivers?
No, so.
Or your first coaching job, maybe college?
My coaching job was with the receivers.
Okay.
So, like, I've been on every side of the ball.
Yeah.
But transitioning from Preef to Bubba specifically, I think it's just different because Preef, like, Bubba played,
yes.
You know, and he has a personal, like, connection with someone who's played and someone who's coached it, you know what I mean? So I think the guys look to him in a certain way because he's done it himself. And then, you know, he'll throw on his game film and you'll see this white dude flying down the field 100 miles an hour, you know what I mean? So he has, like, a different vantage point than a lot of other coaches because he's done it at a high level for 10 years, you know what I mean? So it's just,
he still looks like he could do it.
I think he can. I'll give him a run for my money as far as, like, sprinting wise. Like, we'll go toe for toe now, but He could still run, for sure.
He's still jacked. I thought one of my favorite moments of the entire season was, I'm pretty sure it was the night we clinched against the Jets, and Stefanski's giving his post-game victory speech, and you look around the room, and you got all the players there, and there's Bubba in a helmet, which is just – it's so Bubba. It's the essence of Bubba. It was awesome.
For sure. Bubba still wants to play. He still wants to play, so him putting the helmet on doesn't surprise me.
Were you guys laughing? Did you guys rib him about that a little bit?
Oh, yeah. I'll give him trash for it a little bit. So
I thought he was going to wear it to the playoff game down there in Houston. All right. So you have kind of had this journey. You mentioned coming in defensive side, special teams, started receivers in your first coaching job ever. Do you have a passion for anything in particular, or is it just you love coaching and you're getting to learn so much about, you know, an organization and all the different aspects that go into all three phases?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. I think so. My end goal is to be a head coach. I think that if you look at some of the best head coaches in this league, historically have been guys that have been on offense, defense, and special teams. Yep. You know what I mean? So I think it's something that's hard to do. It's great that I'm getting this experience to do it. I eventually want to be a head coach, and whatever path takes me to being that route is what I want to do. But right now I'm just accumulating as much knowledge as possible, and it's been really beneficial for my career.
Yeah, and also in special teams, you get a chance to work with guys from both sides of the ball that are part of your unit. So that's one of the few areas where you can touch both sides of the ball in an NFL team.
100%, and that's one thing I really enjoy is, like, I know every player. I know the kicker. I know the quarterback. I know every defensive player, every offensive player, and they know me. You know what I mean? So it's a good feeling to have a personal connection with everyone on the team.
Speaking of kickers, Dustin Hopkins had obviously a phenomenal season, and Corey Bohorquez can absolutely boom the ball. He had a great season as well. We were talking about on the show, you know, you get in the offseason, you start to kind of look back and some of the great kickers, and you look at, you know, a guy like Morton Anderson, who's in the Hall of Fame. You look at Adam Vinatieri, who's, you know, considered, if not the best, Justin Tucker, right there. You look at the percentages of field goals that used to be made by the guys who were the best to ever do it, and then you look at now. What has changed? I mean, we're all still human beings. How have people gotten so much better, especially from 50-plus? I mean, it's not even comparable to what it was even 10 years ago. What's happened?
Yeah, for one, just speaking on Dustin, I think he's a great human. He's a great person.
Elite.
Yeah, he's elite. He's great to be around. I love Dustin. I think that as far as, and I don't want to, like, make something up, but, like, technology-wise, so, for example, like, in practice, we use something called, like, TrackMan. And as soon as you hit the ball, it gives you the ball speed, the elevation,
like
that exactly like golf, the exact TrackMan as golf, and you get like instant feedback. Okay, this is what I got to do. This is what I did wrong, and you fix it right then and there. Like, it's instant feedback. Like, we don't have to wait to go into the film room. You know what I mean? So I think using that this year for that guy, along with me and Bubba giving him advice on, like, all those, you know, reinforcements are instant feedback, and that he can make an adjustment right away in practice. You know what I mean? I think just technology alone has helped these field goal percentages go up, in my opinion.
It's because it's wild. I mean, even the Super Bowl, you certainly saw they set the record in the first quarter, then they set the record in the third quarter for the longest field goal ever made in Super Bowl history. I think they made a 55, 57, and a 53. D-Hop, it's funny, though. You came, you know, not the knock on him, because there was, he was a very successful kicker, but that it was kind of like inside of 50, automatic, over 50, we'll see. And then he comes here, doesn't miss from 50-plus, and made so many big kicks. Even going back to that Indianapolis game, had a couple of bombs in that one.
Yep. I think for – and really just anybody, sometimes a breath of fresh air can be, like, good for you. You know what I mean? I don't know what the situation was in L.A., but him coming here and really, like, sparking his career, because he was already good, but doing what he did last season, going into next year, like, he has a chance to, like, make the Pro Bowl, be All-Pro, and be a Hall of Fame kicker if he continues on this trend, in my opinion.
Yeah, there's no doubt. You watched the Super Bowl?
I did.
Yeah. So there was either a special team coordinator's nightmare or dream in that game, right? 8 points in the second half, directly attributable to special teams, and probably the biggest reason why the Chiefs won that game. When you were watching the one goes off the heel, you don't see that very often, but I know everybody has calls, get away. What was kind of going through your mind from as a fan, and then also as a coach, being like, because if that happened, that's a devastating situation.
Yeah, so, and Bubba and I were talking about this, but like in that specific situation, like, they just stopped the Chiefs. They have all the momentum. The Chiefs are punting the ball back. I think they only had 6 points at that time in the game. Really, right, wrong, or indifferent. Like, we teach our returner, hey, if a ball is short or if it's mishit, like, you have to run to the spot. You have to wave your hands, and the entire stadium has to know this is where the ball is landing, and everyone gets the heck out of the way. You know what I mean? I think the returner in that situation just pointed to the ball. The corner has no idea of where that ball is. You have to run to the spot, and once he sees you running and waving, everyone gets out of the way. Yeah. And that's how you avoid that situation. But it's just unfortunate for them. But, like, those plays changed the game. You know, I think on the next play they scored.
Yes, they did.
And then that's all she wrote. You know what I mean? Like, the game was over at that point.
Well, they scored, then the Niners scored, and then blocked extra point. Yeah. And those feel like they always come back to haunt you. When you miss an extra point, it feels like that always is going to play a role.
For sure. And that's why it's so important just to take advantage of every single opportunity you have on the field. You know what I mean? Especially on special teams, the plays are so limited.
Yep.
And, like, if something goes wrong, is so amplified because it's one of 30 plays. You know what I mean? So you almost have to play a perfect game on special teams, right? Whether it's fair or not fair, you almost have to play a perfect game. And that's why it's so crucial. It always goes back to your fundamentals.
And those are game-changing plays. We had one. I think Matt Adams forced a fumble and Ford recovered it. Those are game-changing plays when you're able to make those. And that's what you want from special teams. You want nobody to talk about special teams unless it's we did something good.
For sure. And then, like you said, it's game-changing plays. Every time there's a special teams takeaway or turnover, you're automatically in plus territory right away. That's the biggest difference with, like, takeaways or turnovers on special teams. You're automatically in the red zone if it happens. So,
all right, I have a question for you. This is something that came up on – one of my buddies sent this to me on Twitter. Just kind of a – this is out of left field, but it has to do with the Super Bowl we just watched. So the overtime rules now, right? Both teams get the ball. There's been all this debate. Should you take the ball first? Should you take the ball second? Somebody put out there, and I thought it was interesting. I didn't agree with it, but I thought it was interesting. You win the toss. You say, we're going to kick, and you do an onside kick. Because there's some percentage that you would recover it, and if you do that, then all you have to do is go take that, get a field goal, and the game's over right there. They never get to touch the ball. They recover it. If they score, you still at least get a possession, and you know what you have to do. You can't lose it right there. So I liked it, but I said, look, you would have to be confident there's at least a 10% chance you're going to recover the onside kick. I feel like that's at least a minimum threshold. And then you'd have to feel pretty good that no matter what we do, we're going to be able to get 3 points when we get the ball on offense. What's the real possibility on an onside kick? What would you, in that situation, what would you, if the coach said, look, do you think we can get, what would you be saying?
Well, for one, I don't think anyone in America would be expecting an onside kick in that situation. So the surprise effect would probably be 100%. For two, I just
don't listen to this interview next time we're in the when we're in the Super Bowl, everybody.
For two, I think the percentage of getting an onside kick is so low. I'm not saying it's impossible because it's possible to do it, but the percentage of that happening is so low. But that's an interesting point because the only negative I see of that is if the other team recovers the ball, they're damn near in field goal range. It's automatically 3 points.
Yes.
Now you're trying to hold them from scoring seven.
Yeah.
And if they score seven, like now you're really up against the wall. So I don't know if the risk is worth the reward.
That's one to me that feels like if you do it and it works, you're the smartest person that's ever lived. And if it doesn't work,
you're the dumbest person.
Idiot. Yeah, like complete idiot. All right, we're going to get you out of here on this one. What's something you want Browns fans to know about you? Just about either your journey, who you are as a person, something interesting. Because – you know, we know you're on the coaching staff, and, you know, this is a league where you know about the top coaches and the coordinators, and then you get down in the minutia, and those who are really into it get to know. But this is about human beings coming together, rowing in the same direction for a common goal, right? So what's something when people now hear Stephen Bravo Brown, what's something that you want them to think?
Ooh, that's a good question. Okay. I would say, for one, and I don't know if this answers your question or not, I just think the guys that we had on staff last year, for one, like, we all were hard workers. We all work together really well. We all worked really hard to accomplish a goal, which is winning the Super Bowl. But we made the playoffs, you know what I mean? I think we have a collective guys, and myself, like, I'm a team player, I work hard, and I want to win. Those are things that come to mind when I think of what I want people to think of me. I'm a team player, I work hard, and I want to win.
And we're happy you're a Cleveland Brown. Steven, thank you so much for the time.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
All right, we'll be back with more Cleveland Browns Daily right after this.
Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Be part of one of the most passionate fan bases in the NFL. Join Next Gen STM, presented by Ticketmaster, the official waitlist of your Cleveland Browns. Being a Next Gen STM is the best chance to become a season ticket member in future seasons. Visit clevelandbrowns.com/NextGenSTM. And reserve your spot today. I'm Jason Gibbs on this Friday. Glad you're with us. Right now, let's get to offensive coordinator Ken Dorsey's introductory press conference. Here's part two of that meeting with the Cleveland media.
Can you talk about Deshaun's feel for the outside game? Mm-hmm. Do you think he has a feel for protecting himself? Can you help him with that?
I think all these guys are so competitive. I mean, look, I've been through this a few times now, you know, these guys are so competitive. They want to win. Deshaun wants to win, you know, and he's going to do anything humanly possible to help this football team win games. And sometimes that's going, you know, putting your body on the line to do so. Now, what we got to do is make sure we're evaluating when we're doing those things. You know, is it first down and we're scrambling? We got a first down already. Get down, get out of bounds, you know, and save yourself the hit and those types of things. You know, those are all things that we'll look at, because clearly, like, this team is at a different level when he's on the field. And that's the thing that, you know, we want to do as a staff is make sure we're communicating to him and him communicating with us kind of what he's feeling, what he's seeing, and making sure we're doing, you know, everything possible to keep him healthy.
How much of team had
some issues this year with ball security and turnovers? And obviously, I know you guys kind of had similar issues in Buffalo for at least part of the year. Like, what's your philosophy on having a quarterback who likes to improvise, maybe take chances in that offense and ball security?
That's funny you ask, because we just literally had an offensive staff meeting. That was one of the factors that we talked about. You know, we have some critical factors on offense, you know, that I believe in, and I think, you know, Kevin believes in them as well, you know, that we talked about this morning. And one of them is protecting the house. So, you know, I mean, we as coaches and players, right, we pay our mortgage by winning and, you know, winning football games. And so, you know, in order to do that, the best way to win games is to protect the football and make sure we're doing the right thing. So however that's got to get done, we got to get it done. And to your point, wasn't good enough in my time and for a stretch there in Buffalo, and then, you know, for us here. So that will be a point of emphasis for us to make sure we're doing the right things to, you know, protect the football and, you know, from a off-season emphasis standpoint.
One of the strengths of the offense has been the offensive line here.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, one of the key concepts has been, you know, using guards to pull and mm-hmm. get to that second and third level of the defense. Is you know, with, you know, changing O-line coach, do you bring those same philosophies here? Is that something you want to keep continuing doing? Or do you feel like, you know, the blocking up front and the techniques that you want to employ will differ?
Well, I mean, first and foremost, I mean, you can't get help but get jacked up about this opportunity because of those guys up front. You know, I mean, those guys are you watch them on tape and you can't help but get excited about the guys that we got up there and what they're able to do, because they're diverse in what they can do, to your point. You know, you got a group of guys that can pull. You got a group of guys that can be, you know, zone blocking scheme guys. You got a group of guys that could come out and get movement at the point of attack and gap schemes and duo schemes. So that's the exciting part for me. In terms of scheme moving forward, I think that's why it's so important. And the thing I respect about this organization and Kevin Moth is how thorough they are in making these decisions. Like, it was darn near like a root canal to get this job. Now, I mean, you go through a lot, you know, of testing, of interviews, of, I mean, I met more people in this building than I have in any building I've ever been in, just in the interview process, which is awesome. Like, as somebody coming in, like, that's what you want. So that's been the exciting part for me in this process now of being a part of this, of hiring an offensive line coach, is there's an intentional way of going about it. And the way we're doing it, because let's face it, like, to Kevin's point, like, Bill is one of the best out there. So in order to replace him, we've got to make sure we're intentional with how we're doing it and making the decision that's in the best interest of us as a football team. And in that regard, then when we do make that hire, obviously there's an evaluation process there that he has to go through, because he's the one coaching it and teaching it. And but to your point, I think in offensive football, all right, how are you successful? Let's evaluate what our players do well and make sure we're maximizing that.
Kevin, when you looked at, like you said, you had, it was like getting the root canal, getting in for the square. How much of, how many tape did you watch of Deshaun and the Browns? Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm just kind of curious, like, from your end, how much did you prepare for this?
Well, I mean, yeah, as somebody going in for a job interview, you want to make sure you're prepared as possible. You know, and that was a great opportunity for me to be able to watch some tape and things like that, you know, but obviously in the short amount of time you have to get ready, you know, it's hard, you know, because it's one of those things where things happen fast, you know, in the process, you know, at the end of the season.
About this, that's where I was going to go with this. As you're looking at this, a couple of things jump out about Deshaun that maybe
you're just sort of aware of or whatever that really caught your eye?
I mean, I think we've all talked about, you know, obviously the, you know, physical steel set in which he has. That's the first thing that jumps out at you. But, and then on top of it, you know, when you're watching tape, and again, I wasn't involved in the offense in the past, so, but when you watch it, there's little intricacies of the position of whether he's adjusting protections or making checks at the line of scrimmage and things like that, that, you know, you really see kind of pop up. So just from the outside looking in, the ability to kind of handle the offense and do different things, I think is pretty impressive.
You played in this division a while ago, but it doesn't change much.
No, yeah.
Do you think this winning in this division requires a different running game than in Buffalo?
Well, I think that in this division, right, at the end of the day, there's definitely some carryover into, you know, one, you've got to obviously protect the football because we're playing great defenses. And then two, yeah, you've got to be able to be multiple in how you're attacking these defenses too. So, you know, when you're playing Pittsburgh and Cincy and Baltimore twice a year, you might have to evolve from game one to game two, whether it's running the ball, whether it's throwing the ball, and how you're attacking them. But to your point, look, at the end of the day, I think, you know, there might be a misconception out there. Like, I think that, you know, to be able to, you know, sit there and be able to, you know, put pressure on a defense by running the ball is a darn good thing too. You know, there's nothing wrong with scoring points by running the ball. There's nothing wrong by scoring points by throwing the ball. It's okay. Well, what's gonna allow us to win a football game this week? You know, and yes, there's gonna be things where we have core identity type of things. And again, that evolves as the season goes on and as you get go through camp and whatnot. But I think that, you know, you've got to be able to, as good as this division is and as good as those teams are on defense, we got to make sure that, you know, we're attacking them in different ways.
Deshaun recently said that he does not like mm-hmm. scripted plays. Mm-hmm. So my question is then, you know, do you have a conversation with him about that? How do you address the fact that he doesn't like that? And what can you do about a quarterback that doesn't like scripted plays?
No, that's a great question. I think, one, you know, as a coach and player relationship, there's some things that are non-negotiables, you know, where it's like, look, this is the way we're doing it, you know, and I understand, like, if you know, there might be some pushback, but this will help us at the end of the day, this will help us win football games. And then there's some things that, you know, you communicate with them, and there's some, you know, there's what are you comfortable with? Where are you at with this? You know, because there's the, you know, the factor, yes, with the, if he feels comfortable with it, but then there's also a whole offense you got to consider with that stuff as well. So, you know, there's some things that we'll go through and say, hey, you know, if you're not comfortable, we won't do it that way, you know, or there's some things that, hey, look, this will help us be better on offense. We will do it this way, but there's conversations to be had with, you know, in that regard down the line. In terms of that, we're not quite there yet. You know, there'll definitely be conversations of things like that down the line, but, you know, that's step 75 or so, and we're on step 5, you know. So, but yeah, I mean, obviously if it's something that he has a conviction about, then we'll talk about it and make sure we're doing the right thing for us as an offense moving forward. And obviously a key part of the offense is the quarterback playing at a high level.
So much more to come on this Friday. I'm Jason Gibbs. You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, a sports betting partner of your Cleveland Browns, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Don't miss Billy Joel and Rod Stewart together for the first time ever Friday, September 13th at Cleveland Browns Stadium. Tickets on sale now. Visit ClevelandBrownsStadium.com/BillyandRod2024 for more information. It's Billy Joel and Rod Stewart together for one night only. I'm Jason Gibbs. Thanks to Ephraim Banda, Browns safety coach. Thanks to Stephen Bravo Brown, Browns special teams assistant coach, for their time. Z with an outstanding job on the position review of the Cleveland Browns running back room. We're off on Monday. Enjoy your three-day weekend. We're back with you on Tuesday. The Next Level is next. You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, a sports betting partner of your Cleveland Browns, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
You've been listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, a production of the Cleveland Browns and ESPN 850 WKNR.